And this is what I actually tell a lot of people who have never been in the Philippines, particularly, you know, my white friends.
Yes.
I'm sorry, singular, my white friend. Jack here, about what it is going to be like when you first step off the airplane into the, you know, the non-humidity, non-climate-controlled part that is the Philippines. Here's what you can do. Leave your car out in the sun.
For a couple of hours.
Leave the windows rolled up. Wait a little bit for those couple of hours. Okay, after that's done and your car is nice and toasty, open up your car. Get inside the car. Close the door behind you. Do not roll down the windows. Once you're inside the car, take a very deep, deep breath through your nose. And then exhale through your nose.
Ugh.
Do that about 5 times.
Yeah, that was, and I lasted about 5 minutes and then I rolled down the windows.
Welcome to the PA Podcast.
Radical podcast on philosophy, political theory, and popular culture.
By a priest.
And an atheist. You ever get the feeling that everything in America is completely fucked up?
All right, hello everybody. This is Jack Stevens, the priest of the podcast.
How's it going? It's Joshua Castro, the atheist of the podcast.
It's been a while since we've done our last podcast, but that's okay. And we are not doing it on Sart. We'll get to Sart in a month or so. Right now, we're going to be talking about the Philippines, the current situation in the Philippines, and my upcoming trip. I will be leaving Saturday to the Philippines.
Are you excited, Jack?
I'm very excited.
I'm excited for you.
Are you?
Yeah, I'm also slightly afraid for you, but we'll get to that in a second.
Yes, because I'm going to be going on an exposure trip with Bayan in the Philippines. Bayan is a very large progressive organization, leftist progressive organization in the Philippines that was set up in...
I want to say 1980. I'm pretty sure it's 1980.
Okay.
So Bayan, which is an acronym or an abbreviation for Bagong Alyansang Makabayan, and that means in Tagalog, the New Patriotic Alliance. So it's a large...
Multi-sectoral,
multi-class political alliance, leftist political alliance of leftist organizations, progressive organizations in the Philippines, so like workers, women, students...
LGBT.
Religious sector, Christians.
Religious, yeah.
Muslims. Like pretty much anyone and everyone that's basically for like true sovereignty and democracy in the Philippines.
Yes. So me and Josh are part of Bayan USA, one of their international branches they have throughout the world. And Josh himself has been on a what we call Baliksim Bayanan trip before. I believe you went 2 years ago.
So I went in 2005.
That was
the first time I've ever been back to the Philippines.
Never mind.
And then I went and then once again in 2006. So it's been just about three years. 2 or 3 years since the last time I was there in the Philippines.
Okay. So before we get into, some of the exposure stuff that Josh has been through and some of the stuff that I hopefully look forward to go through, we'll talk just a little brief history of the Philippines. The Philippines, obviously, an archipelago. Colonized by Spain for centuries.
People believe it was about 300 years.
300 years. And in 1898, I believe, it was the Katipunan, a resistance organization in the Philippines, one of many over the centuries, but this one was able to be successful. It was founded by Andres Bonifacio, and
very good.
And the turncoat.
Well, he was the main
Aguinaldo.
Guy. He's the main guy. The Katipunan. So, okay, really slowly. Kata asta asang kagalang galang kaga. I can't even get that right. Kagagalang galang ang katipunan ng mga anak ng bayan. That means the highest and most revered sons and daughters of the land. That was the organization they formed. And it was an underground society. It was a secret society. And it basically was, you know, about like kicking Spain out of the Philippines and forming an independent nation.
Which they did. And in 1898-99, the United States entered the war in the Philippines. And they fought against Spain. They allied with the Katipunan. And eventually they took Manila from the Katipunan. And they eventually took the island from the Katipunan only after a bloody civil war, which, depending on how you want to date it, lasted anywhere from 8 to 16 years. I believe 1916 was one of the last battles. It was brutal. If you want to learn more about it, read some stuff by Jose Maria Sison. If you more available American writers, Howard Zinn, of course, Noam Chomsky. They talk about the brutal occupation of the Philippines. Something like 300,000. What?
So like
to a million people died.
There's the more conservative estimates are somewhere around 500,000, and then like some historians like will even say like, well, up to a million people died, because some people like will talk a lot about the actual military deaths, when in actuality there was a lot of civilians, mostly civilians, that were killed in the war through disease and just, you know, just outright like, you know, merciless brutality.
Yeah. And the things that come with everyday war, interrupting life, peasant life, rural life, city life, and what have you. So after the United States brutally suppressed the Philippines, forced English upon them in schools, forced an American education system, outlawed the flying of the Filipino flag. You can only fly the U.S. flag in the Philippines. And many other decades of imperialist policies where the United States basically exploited the land, exploited the people.
It's 1946.
The Philippines apparently was supposedly freed, but only after a bunch of treaties that essentially kept the Philippines subservient to United States interests.
There's a lot of, and then, you know, if you throw in also the Japanese occupation during World War II.
There you go.
Well, something to be said about that was the United States basically, like, they left the Philippines to its own devices when the Japanese invaded. Yeah. They said, well, forget about you guys.
They even left some of their own people to its own devices.
So, I mean, yeah, back to Bataan, which, you know, people think is a really awesome movie, and John Wayne comes there and saves the day.
Here's the story America will never forget. A picture produced while the world-shaking event was actually taking place, with an inspired cast living their roles as the gallant heroes who stood firmly and bravely in the face of certain death.
I know it's tough when the woman you love goes over to the enemy, but you can't let her
take
her
heart. Look, Joe, that's none of your business.
That's right. But risking the lives of these men is my business.
Well, that's a lot of bullshit.
John Wayne?
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
I mean, the reality was, this is what happened, is that the Communist Party that was there in the Philippines at the time, they obviously didn't enjoy the presence of the Japanese, you know, like catching babies on bayonets and like raping women and like destroying like the landscape. So they said, F this. We're going to get an army together and we're going to kick these bastards out themselves, because obviously the Americans aren't going to help us. And on top of that, we're going to save the Americans who've been come imprisoned by the Japanese. And on top of that, we're going to figure out a way to set up an independent state once we finally like kick these bastards off our country. Well,
the United States
came back.
And
like Douglas MacArthur said, I shall return. Yeah, and he definitely did come back. And he took away, once again, the Americans took away a victory from the Filipino people.
After bombing completely the entire city of Manila.
They turned Manila into a pancake.
Yeah, basically. It used to be a beautiful city. Now,
The Pearl of the Orient was what they used to call Manila back in like the 1940s. It was a beautiful city. And basically, they just destroyed its entire landscape.
What's with these beautiful cities filled with people of color, like, you know, Beirut was the pearl of the Middle East or the Mediterranean, and of course that was completely destroyed.
Iraq was the cradle of civilization.
Iraq was the cradle of civilization, completely destroyed. Pearl of the Orient, which was Manila, completely flattened. Oh, white people, please. Yeah, so once that happened, not only did the United States return and kick the Japanese out of the Philippines, who were weakened by the Communist Party, guerrillas, and just
The Hukbala Hop.
The Hukbala Hop and other guerrillas within the nation who were allied with them or fought separately. They also decided to kill a bunch of Filipinos, and they killed the Hukbala Hop, and they tried to suppress them because they realized that not only were they fighting the Japanese to get back their quote-unquote land, they also had to fight the communists because, well, if the communists were in a strong position, which they were in Italy and France and in other countries in Europe...
And Russia.
And well, yeah. They realized they couldn't implement the policies that they wanted, so they obviously attacked the communists in the Philippines, which is what they did in France, and which is what they did in Italy. Or else the communists would have probably taken power in all three of those countries.
And the United States would have lost an incredibly powerful bastion of political, socioeconomic, and, you know...
All that.
Strategic power. Yeah.
The U.S. Has a vested interest in presence in Southeast Asia. Southeast Asia is a vital region for United States interests. And the Philippines is kind of considered a gateway to Southeast Asia. And if you look at it on a map, it's in the Northern Hemisphere. It's right by Indonesia. It's right by China.
Just south of Japan.
So along with U.S. bases in Japan and South Korea, which check the Chinese and the North Korean regime, they have...
Not to mention the quote-unquote Muslim threat of Indonesia.
Exactly. They have a presence in the Philippines. And the Philippines, during the Vietnam War, was vital because there used to be a U.S. air base there. So they had air bases in Japan, Korea, and the Philippines. So the Philippines is, like I said, a gateway for Southeast Asia for U.S. military presence. And because of this vested interest, not only in military presence, but in economic presence, the land is vastly untapped in certain regions. At least at that point it was. So, you know, U.S. presence, corporations were considered just like, you know, Philippine citizens, basically. The Philippines was governed by a puppet state. Still is.
I mean, it was like really, really obvious at one point. I mean, maybe not so much now to like, you know, the world at large, because supposedly there's a democracy there.
Yeah. The uprising against Marcos, and which brought a worse president to power, which was Corazon Aquino.
Yeah, Corazon Aquino,
she ended up killing more people in like 3 years than Marcos did an entire martial law period. Because people said that they were protected by the church, they were protected by the nuns and the priests. But when Aquino took power and she started arming basically just roving gangs and militias, she started arming them, giving them a little bit pittance, a little bit of money. They were basically attacking anyone, and they didn't care if they had a collar or a habit on. It just didn't matter to them.
Yeah, and then furthermore, then Aquino, just like the other presidents before her, would say, oh, that's not... I have nothing to do with that. That must be the communists like getting out of control.
Yeah, exactly. Must be the communists. So, you know, that's kind of like a mini history of the Philippines. Very important to the United States presence. And even though the bases were unratified in around, what, 1992 or so, the early 90s?
Yeah, they were more or less kicked out. I mean, the major U.S. bases that were there was Clark Air Base, and then there was
Subic
Bay at Longopo City. And so they basically, this, you know, place for the Air Force to come in, and then this bay for the Navy to come in. They basically scrapped those like large bases, and so they no longer exist there. But that doesn't mean that the United States still doesn't put American troops on Philippine soil. Yeah. That doesn't mean there aren't places like in the Philippines that are supposed to be military bases or whatnot that are run by the Philippine government, yet the Americans use them as a place to like deploy troops from, which is illegal according to the Constitution.
Yes, which is illegal, but there's a large American presence in the Philippines. They're able to go anywhere they want, wherever they want, based on these treaties. This is more contemporary stuff.
So we're moving on here.
Yeah, moving contemporary, on. Yeah. Contemporary. Basically, they're there, apparently, to fight the Abu Sayyaf, which is an Islamic group in the Philippines. It's very small. It's almost like a band of just kind of pirates who kind of terrorize the locals. It's nothing really that the local police couldn't handle. You don't need an entire U.S. military presence in there.
Let's just say that I'm gonna use this as an example. Like, supposedly there are gang task force in cities, right?
Because
there's a bunch of like folks just lumping folks, and you know they're trying to get over, and that's what they do, right? And that's unfortunate. Do you need state troopers and or federal military National Guard to come and handle the Bloods and the Crips?
Yeah, no. Wait, not at all. And that's kind of like, you can almost think it like that. Like the Abu Sayyaf is just one of yet a many gang who have an Islamic influence, kind of.
And then at least the rumor that I understand is that they were... They were brought over to Afghanistan. They were actually like
by the United States.
By the United States during
back in the 80s.
Back in the 80s to fight against supposedly, you know, the interests of the Soviet Union in Afghanistan.
There you go.
So they were actually allies of the Mujahideen.
You know, which makes sense.
Yeah.
There was a strong outcry against the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan throughout the Muslim world, especially in Saudi Arabia. And so anyway, so apparently the U.S. troops are there for military exercises. They're like live ammunition exercises and trainings where the military trains them while they're in combat. So obviously the military, I'm pretty sure they don't necessarily have orders to shoot on sight. However, if they're under threat and attack, they obviously the U.S. military is going to fire back. And if they're in a live zone that is a war zone, obviously they're going to be firing their weapons while they're also teaching the Philippine army and police to do whatever. So they're in Mindanao. However, they're also in other areas where the New People's Army, which is a communist insurgency, which has been around since the NPA was set up in 69?
Yes.
So the NPA was
set up March of 69, right.
March of 1969, and there's been a basically a strong communist guerrilla presence in the Philippines ever since. And they're the big boys in town. They have lots and lots of troops, tens of thousands of troops all throughout, and they control certain parts of Luzon and certain parts of the Visayas and Mindanao. And the United States Army, actually a U.S., I don't know if he was Army or Marines, but he was injured in a firefight with the MPA. Surprise, surprise. And the MPA obviously survived that encounter. So I thought they were there for Abu Sayyaf, but I guess not.
So, which is funny, once again, we're, you know, if we're talking about lousy intelligence or like, you know, ulterior motives militarily, the United States went to Iraq supposedly to fight Al-Qaeda. And now they're fighting a bunch of like different separatist sectarian groups, as well as Al-Qaeda and Republican Guard loyal to Saddam Hussein, which is the Ba'ath Party, which has nothing to do with Al-Qaeda.
Exactly.
So the same thing in the Philippines. If you won't go there, you want to fight Al-Qaeda. Abu Sayyaf is a small banding group, which probably has no actual ties to Al-Qaeda.
Yeah.
And then you want to fight the communists.
Yeah.
Right? And the communists obviously have no ties to Al-Qaeda.
Yeah.
They're up for national interest, and they have no interest whatsoever in attacking the United States because they don't care about that. They want to kick anyone and everyone who's threatening national sovereignty out of the land.
Exactly.
And gain control of the government. So,
So I guess before we get into the next section, that brings us to a musical break.
Been a minute since I last felt you under my feet. Last felt them 8 rays of your sun on my cheek. When we first met, I really had to struggle to speak. Now I hunger for you like I ain't had nothing to eat. It's something that's deep within me. The legends and the history, the trivia, the mystery of this story of ours, a story of wars. We travel on a road full of scars. Late night, all alone with you, I notice the stars. Far away from the city in a secret location. The spirit in the air that birthed the whole nation, but we dissed you from the start. Your heart was forsaken. I'm here to rectify that. We've done waiting. In fact, I'm compensating for them days that we lost. Hoping for the very moment that I make it across. Back in your arms, the only place I feel I belong. With a million folks behind me, all singing along.
You so fly to me. You and I should be just you and I, but I know I'm just being greedy. Can you blame me with you?
Eight rays on the sun of my cheek. Eight rays on the sun of my cheek.
It's been a minute since I seen my sister. Loose from in her, used to love her, now I miss her. She the reason that my fist is steady closed with the memory of those that we abandoned. And I know she got my back, she delivered me a champion. And I tell them about his auntie in the east, while we hungry in the beast. Our history, the teachers never teach until we reaching for the notion of a nation from each, according to ability to each, according to they need. I'm writing, recording, and performing a feat. Both my hunger to succeed, but even more for the sea, and even more for the people who need to breathe easy. But that they can't seem to put down, the Yossies and the Beaties. And they say because I lost my native tongue that I forgot you. My heart still pumps the blood of Datu Lapu Lapu when I got you. And truthfully, how could I not without you, when the children in the belly barely know a thing about you.
You so fly to me, you and I should be just you and I, but I know I'm just being greedy. Can you blame me? Just
Breathe easy. No, she got my back.
Yo. It's been a minute and a half since we last touched hands, and that's a lot longer than your man originally planned. I like to think that I stand with you attached to my back. I like to think I bring you with me when I get on the track. Matter of fact, let me take this time to thank you out loud for birthing my brother Kiwi and Geologic in C-Town. Such style, such grace, such a marvelous face. I love everything you put on my plate. I think of you when I get used to being farther from home. I think of you when I feel like I can't fight no more. You the reason I'm even alive, and if I've neglected you, I'm sorry, but I've become one with my gun since the last time you saw me. I get it now, I know why you like them cons, them gorilla type folks, them rebellious types. So I've joined that team, now I'm on that street with thousands of your kids marching with hopes to get you free. I see you in my sleep and keep a piece of you in my heart, and I promise, and ain't no ocean that could keep us apart.
Like, what exactly are they doing?
The United States Army?
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, okay, well, they're there.
Let's talk about it.
They're there protecting their interests. Obviously, in the Philippines, there is corporate export zones where people are not, where workers in these export zones basically are, well, the people, the corporations that work in those zones are immune from national law. So any type of gains the labor movement in the Philippines has made and progressive organizations have made, regarding minimum wage and
worker protection,
the right to unionize, the right companies actually giving unions money for education purposes, which the unions use, and whatever, like, those don't exist in the export zones. And the communists are a threat to that because the communists want national sovereignty. Obviously, the United States is going to, their ears are going to perk up. And when their interests are threatened, they're either going to covertly or overtly try to destabilize regions that are trying to fight for their own independence, as we've seen in Honduras.
Oh, hey. Oh, yeah, that's right. Something's going on in Honduras, but yeah, we're talking about Iran.
Yeah, we are talking constantly about Iran and about the people of Iran who are protesting. And apparently they're protesting because they love democracy. But in Honduras, they're protesting because they're supporters of President Zelaya.
Who's probably a commie.
He wasn't a commie in the beginning. He was an elite, left-of-center dude. Chavez didn't support him. Neither did some of the other leftists in the region, just because they're like, oh, this guy's just kind of like a centrist, kind of like Obama. And eventually, over the years, he was just like, you know what? This is screwed up. We need to raise the minimum wage. People in this country are hurting and whatever. So anyway, so yeah, and we're not really hearing too much about that. Negotiations for Honduras, bombings for Iran. Also,
that's awesome.
Yeah, also with exploitation by imperialist powers of Japan and Australia, the United States and Australia,
Germany.
Certain interests in China who are trying to exploit the lack of protection in the Philippines for the people, and the lack of protection and oversight of the economy.
I mean, there was an attempt by Chinese corporations to get some kind of telecommunications deal with the government,
and they just bribed everyone left and right.
And basically, the government was going to give them, I don't know, a few billion dollars, like, without, like, a no-bid contract.
Yeah.
And this money was going to come from taxpayers, and then the majority of the profit that was going to be made from the actual project was going to be put in the pockets of politicians.
There you go. So, yeah, that was exposed.
That was the ZTE scandal. The
ZTE scandal. That was exposed by people. And actually, the press has in certain areas, has a strong tradition of activism, because under the Marcos regime, the press was obviously, you know, and they still are oppressed, and monitored and beaten up and detained sometimes. And Heather, I believe it was the Philippine Inquirer, was shut down for a couple of days during uprisings against Arroyo a few years back.
Well, there was the time when she declared an executive order, like it was a state of emergency.
Yeah,
and
state of emergency. It
actually, she actually shut, this was what, 2 or 3 years ago?
Yeah, 3 years ago, I believe.
And she shut down all the newspapers and had them ransacked. And
yeah, and they remember the Marcos years. I mean, that wasn't that long ago. That was like 30 years ago. So they're just like, hey, we know how to deal with this, and like, we're not going to shut up. We're going to like print what's going on.
No, you can't have the black boxes and all this kind of stuff. It's like, no.
Despite the press unfreedoms they have in that country, they tend to have more backbone. Even though, you know, they come from elitist circles and they don't necessarily cover everything in the Philippines like we want them to cover, they're doing a better job than the U.S. media covering the U.S.
There are pockets of people that definitely see themselves as journalists, not in this professionalism sense, but we have this very like almost a sacred duty to provide information to people because we've weathered the storm of martial law and like nothing like that is ever going to prevent us from doing our jobs ever.
And newspapers are strong there just because a lot of people don't have the internet, so you know they buy the newspapers on the streets,
right? Exactly.
So they still have wide circulations. Despite that massive corruption in the country by imperialist powers, there is massive corruption within the country because obviously after decades and decades of the United States favoring certain families, landlords, and what have you, a lot of the land, a lot of the farmland is owned by a very small minority of Filipinos within the country who exploit the peasants. The peasants have their own fights. The workers have their own fights. And, you know, there's usury, there's land grabbing, there's fake land reform where the peasants, like, oh, we're giving you land reform, so here's some land. Oh, okay, cool, but you have to till a certain amount or else we're going to take it away.
Or how about this? We'll make you stock owners in the land that you farm, and we'll give you a piece of paper that says you own something, and, like, we'll say that we're responsible for paying you a dividend every year, but not paying you the dividend.
And you can't farm it anyway, because but you own it somehow.
You own it somehow.
Yeah, exactly. And then when obviously they give them a bunch of land and it's only a single family and they're forced to work their children and everyone else, they still can't till all that land. And they're like, oh, you're not using this land. We're going to use it for development or to grow tulips.
Yeah, fresh-cut flowers.
Fresh-cut flowers or rice to export outside the country, you know, because it makes economic sense to export rice out of the country, but it doesn't make sense for the peasants and the workers who are starving in the country and paying exuberant amounts of prices for rice.
Because of the way that capitalism has like completely fucked up the Philippine economy, it's more economical for a peasant to buy imported rice from a different country than it is
Thailand.
Than it is to actually grow your own rice or buy rice that's actually farmed in the Philippines.
Exactly. So that brings us to exposure trips and the exposure trips that Bayan USA does. And Bayan USA, just like in Bayan in the Philippines, is an international, is an organization in the United States that's made up of workers. No, not workers.
Made up of
student organizations, youth.
Women's organizations.
Women's organizations, youth organizations. The strongest tend to be the youth and the students. There is Gabriela USA, which just celebrated its first Congress and first year, I believe. Not even their first year.
I mean, they basically, there were women's organizations that had cropped up.
Yeah.
Well, representing like Filipino women's organizations. And they
banded together.
They banded together and said, well, they've been around for maybe a couple of years. So we know what we're going to do. We're going to actually join together officially as an international chapter of Gabriela. And much like how Bayan is an alliance of progressive organizations, multi-sectoral, Gabriela is an alliance of women's organizations in the Philippines. And so they decided to charter together a chapter outside the Philippines in the United States.
Yeah. And the strongest ones in that area are FIRE, New York, Filipinas for Rights and Empowerment.
Tanay Sa Seattle
in Seattle. Yep. And
Babae,
San Francisco.
And there might be some cropping up in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Possibly somewhere in Washington, D.C.
Maybe somewhere in Canada.
Maybe. Oh, actually, there's a buy in Canada.
There's a buy in Canada now.
But I don't know if necessarily they've set up a Gabriela Canada yet.
So anyway,
Gap can.
That'll be good. Anyway, so they have exposure trips, and people have been going for years and years now, at least since you know, you could I guess technically say since like 1995.
Even before Bayan
existed.
Bayan USA actually existed as an alliance here in the United States, which chartered in 2005. LFS, the League of Filipino Students chapter at San Francisco State, started sending people back to the Philippines probably around the time of its inception.
Yeah.
So when it was formed in the late 90s at San Francisco State, it was saying, look, And just like how Jack and I have been talking for the past, I don't know, half an hour, 20 minutes or so about the Philippines, people would study and figure out, why are we as Filipinos like here in this country? Why is anyone in this country anyway, in the United States, that wasn't, whose lineage does not begin here? And it led us to have to figure out all these questions and to study about the history, the socioeconomic realities of the country, the political economics of the country. And we came to a conclusion of how, wow, we're displaced. A lot of us are displaced. And if that's the case, all we're going to do right now is like study about something that we don't really have any experience with. So the point of going on an exposure trip is to connect this chasm that stands between people regarding their knowledge, their academic, studious knowledge of what is the reality of their homeland with actually their experience that they do not have.
There we go. And when people go to the Philippines, they always do report backs. People go through educational workshops. They learn from the peasants' organizations in the Philippines. They learn from the women organizations. They learn from the workers and the students and any other type of sector that people just happen to be visiting that year. And there's multiple people from multiple organizations around Bayan USA that go every year. They see what's going on in the land. They learn from the workers.
They eat what they eat. They smell what they smell.
Yeah, all that stuff.
They
learn some history. Then they share what's going on in the United States and the organizations and the organizing they're doing. And so a lot of the information that we get in the United States, not only getting it from the internet, it comes from personal experience, from people who've seen workers on strike, women in garment factories,
students dealing with the day-to-day realities of how much like it's how hard it is to be a student when tuition is rising and your schools are falling apart.
Exactly. So
sounds familiar.
Yeah. So Joshua, I would like for you to, I guess, talk about some of your experiences in the Philippines, so I can, I guess, sense what. So yeah, I would like to learn what happened with you over in the Philippines, and so I can get a sense of, I guess, what I'm going to encounter when I visit the peasants and workers sector. And by the way, might I add, I was in New York recently. Right. I was in Brooklyn. I was in Crown Heights, Brooklyn. And I was there for about 4 days, and I could not stand the humidity. It was god-awful. I am Sunset Irish. I'm this Mick from this little corner, southwestern corner of San Francisco that's foggy 90% of the year, never humid, always cold, and I could barely stand it. And I remember, Joshua, you gave me a good advice how I should get used to the heat, besides going to Brooklyn, of course.
And this is what I actually tell a lot of people who have never been in the Philippines, particularly, you know, my white friends.
Yes.
I'm sorry, singular, my white friend. Jack here, about what it is going to be like when you first step off the airplane into the, you know, the non-humidity, non-climate-controlled part that is the Philippines. So here's what I would say you should do, Jack. And I already told you this, but I'm going to give this advice to everyone else who's listening.
Yes.
If you want to get at least a taste, a teeny, teeny taste on the tip of your tongue about what it was going to be like, that first experience. Okay. Right now, and we're in a heat wave right now in the Bay Area. This is about as hot as it probably is going to get.
Yeah.
Right?
And I happened to be in Marin County visiting my parents, and it was 90 over there, and my car was in the sun for a long time.
Okay. I know. Like, here's what you can do. Leave your car out in the sun.
For a couple of hours.
Leave the windows rolled up. Right? Wait a little bit for those couple of hours. Okay, after that's done and your car is nice and toasty, open up your car. Get inside the car. Close the door behind you. Do not roll down the windows. Once you're inside the car, take a very deep, deep breath through your nose. And then exhale through your nose.
Ugh.
Do that about 5 times.
Yeah, that was, and I lasted about 5 minutes and then I rolled down the windows. Yeah, I tried that. I don't know how. Well, I am going to survive.
You will survive.
Yeah. I might not survive the military, but I will survive the heat wave because I'll have no choice.
Right. If the heat is the worst thing you're going to deal with in an exposure trip, Jack, then you know, you'll be all right. And so I guess that brings us to our next musical break. So enjoy a little bit of some songage here.
Walang kaibigan, walang kasama. Ikaw ba'y naluluto?
pag-iisip mo'y nagugulo sa buhay ng tao, sa takbo ng buhay mo. Ikaw ba'y isang mayaman o ikaw'y isang mahirap lang? Sino sa inyong dalawa ang mas nahihirapan? Mastan mo ang mga bata, mastan mo ang mga bata. Ikaw ba'y walang nakikita sa takbo ng buhay nila? Mastan mo ang mga bata, ang buhay ay hawak nila. Mastan mo ang mga bata, ang sagot ayong makikita. Ikaw ba'y ang tao walang pakialam sa mundo, ngunit ang katotohanan ikaw may naguguluhan? Tayo ay naglalakbay, habol natin ang buhay, ngunit ang maging bata ba'y tulay tungo sa hanap nating buhay? Basta mo ang mga bata, ang aral sa kanila makukuha. Ano nga ba ang gagawin sa buhay na hindi naman sa atin? Itanong mo sa mga bata, itanong mo sa mga bata, ano ang kanilang nakikita sa buhay na hawak nila? Mastan mo ang mga bata, sila ang tunay na pinagpala. Kaya dapat nating pahalagahan, dapat din kayang kaligtasan. Mastan mo ang mga bata, mastan mo ang mga bata. Ikaw ba'y walang nakikita sa takbo ng buhay nila? Mastan mo ang mga bata, ang buhay ay hawak nila. Mastan mo ang mga bata, ang sagot ayaw makikita.
Recently, unfortunately, we had a Bayan USA member in the Philippines, Melissa Rojas.
Right,
she was on
a medical mission. I mean, yeah. She actually lived. She had lived in the United States for quite some time, but I believe that she was born in the Philippines.
Citizen. She doesn't US have citizen. Dual citizenship.
She went back there and decided that her best work, the best way that she could serve her community and her people, was to go back and to use her skills that she had learned to provide medical services to people that are not receiving medical services, because you don't get medical services in the Philippines.
Yeah, no, you don't.
I mean, one of the top killers of children is communicable diseases, and that should give you an idea of how bad health wise the Philippines is. So she went back, was doing her thing, and not only was she providing services, but she was also attempting to organize people and say, look, the country is in a bad state. Like, we don't have to live like this. Let's work together to make the country better than it could be. And in the case of Melissa, I mean, that was too much for the government to take. And the government does not want it to be criticized, first of all, for things that it's not getting done. And second of all, it does not want people being critical of the government, because obviously, that would expose their sham and their hustle, and would force people en masse to decry the government and ask for something better.
Yeah.
And so because of her activities, which is perfectly legal and understandable, I mean, your situation is bad, you should figure out some way to make it better, right? She was abducted by a group of masked men, obviously against her will.
Okay.
And she was
her and her two friends.
She was held incommunicado along with these two gentlemen that were also abducted for about, it was
4 or 5 days. Yeah.
She was tortured. They beat the crap out of her. They
slammed her head against walls. She couldn't. She saw white flashes. I've had this happen before. I've played football and I've had concussions, and they're very scary. But I've only had one. I've never had five in a row, because she kept talking about every time her head was banged against the wall, she was seeing whatever. And it almost looks like stars. It's really freaky. and beat up, threatened she was going to be killed.
They said they knew where her family was, yeah. And on
top... They forced her to say she was New People's Army, surprisingly.
So this is an interesting thing. Once the when the government finds out there's anybody, like, regardless of their political orientation, that is critical of them or is organizing people to stand up for their rights, they're basically saying, look, we're going to get you. And on top of that, we're going to make you a suspect that you're a communist.
Exactly.
And... that's not good.
Yeah, and so she came back. There was an article in the New York Times about it. And before the government even opened up a case to investigate allegations, and the government should know that its military is doing bad things when a United Nations inquiry into the Philippines is basically telling the government that your military is abducting and killing people.
All right, Philip Alston, who was a special rapporteur for the UN... Commission on Human Rights. He's also a law professor at NYU, I believe.
Yeah.
Went to the Philippines, you know, went on a fact-finding mission and basically said, look, it's obvious that the military, if not outright responsible for these, is very heavily connected. And
that's strong condemnation from United Nations.
The United Nations said
they never do that stuff that much.
I mean, it's not just like Amnesty International. This is like the big folks, you know, the UN saying this. And on top of that, if the military is to be blamed or is to be heavily suspected for what's going on regarding these abductions and tortures and killings, then guess who is in charge of the military?
The president.
The president.
Yeah. And when somebody makes, like they say, you know what, I was in a military base and I was being beaten and tortured and I kept hearing everyone calling themselves sir, yes sir, and talking on the radio, and I heard jets and helicopters and firing ranges, it's not a long shot that she's not making this up, that it probably did happen, and you should at least investigate it. But before they even investigated, they just said, oh, she made it up. They didn't even investigate. They're like, oh, she made it up. And recently she had a press conference, which we will hear some a little bit right now.
Right.
So let's hear some of the words from Melissa Rojas.
I was in the Philippines for an exposure program, doing volunteer work in the community, and also doing research for my writing project. I was in La Paz, Tarlac, conducting health surveys in the community for a future medical mission. On May 19, 2009, about 1:30 in the afternoon, I and my two companions, John Edward Handoff and Juanito Carabeo, heard a banging on the front door and a voice asking that the door be opened. About 15 men in civilian clothes, armed with high power rifles and wearing ski masks, some of them had bonnets on to cover their faces, surrounding the house. I was surprised and very scared. They forcibly opened the door and the armed men went into the house, coming from the front and the back door, and ordered us to drop face flat on the ground. But I kept trying. I kept trying to stand up and asking, why are they doing this? But they pushed me. I then started to shout my name, repeating it again and again. But stop. They kept shouting my name, but I was punched repeatedly. And they tried to tape my mouth, but I kept taking it off, saying my name over and over again. I saw that my two companions were already blindfolded and taped at the mouth and were being taken to a blue van. I was trying to stop the armed men from putting me into the van. I remember when two men entered my cell, and one of them, who they called Tatay, pulled my handcuffs, raising me so that it was sitting. Then he raised me so that it was sitting. Then he punched me, then a thumb was pressed to my throat, choking me. Then he struck me again on my left jaw, and I heard a ringing in my ears. They said that it was hard-headed and that I better answer their questions, and they kept repeating their questions, and they kept beating me. Before they left, I heard the man say they should just shoot me. So I couldn't sleep the rest of the time, and I kept waiting because I knew they would come back, and I prepared for the worst. And they came back hours later, and they asked me and they asked me, are you ready to die? And they said before they kill people, they make them pee and shit from pain before they die. And then they dragged me out of my cell.
Although it is still very difficult to talk about the incident, I wanted to tell the truth about what happened to me, because I don't want what happened to me to happen to anyone else ever again. I want the world to know what happened, because the Philippine government and military should not get away with what they did to me, to Juanito, to John Edward, and they cannot get away with what they did to many other people. Because there are still families looking for their loved ones, and there are many more still missing. I plan on pursuing the case for as long as it takes to seek justice for what they did to me. I am asking
so,
the American people and the Philippines.
Yeah, that's pretty heavy stuff.
Very, yeah.
So I just want to let everyone know that right now Melissa is going through a really tough time too. It's not just the fact that, you know, she was actually like physically assaulted. Like she's been really heavily like psychologically like damaged by this experience.
So that's I should be fine. I'm gonna be with good folks. So we'll see what happens, but I will be being exposed to many of things. And Joshua, I guess you can talk about some of you, what's been going on with you during your two exposure trips.
Well, I'll point to a couple of highlights, and there's two stories that I usually tell. And like the first one is this: there's this place in Tarlac, which is I remember it was about a 2 or 3 hour bus ride away from Manila, and this is in Luzon. This is the northern part of the island in the Philippines, and there is this place called the Hacienda Luisita, and it's a huge sugarcane plantation that's owned by the Cojanco family. The Cojanco family are the relatives by marriage of the Aquinos. And if you're familiar with that last name, that's because Corazon Aquino was a former president of the Philippines. And that huge, huge tract of sugarcane plantation, just imagine like all of South San Francisco. It's kind of like more or less the size of the plantation of sugarcane that they own. And they employ these people. They don't get paid anything. There was supposed to be land reform, which is supposed to give some number of the peasants and some of the farm workers a number of privileges in either ownership or abilities to make some more of a profit off the land. But obviously that was a load of BS. And so they got fed up. They formed a union. They joined with the Kilosang Mayuno, whom Jack is probably going to visit.
Yep.
The May 1st Movement, which is a large alliance of unions in the Philippines, genuine militant labor unions.
And I'm reading a book on them. And this author who wrote the book around 1995 asked, I forget who he asked. He asked one of the leaders, and he said, what is genuine militant unionism? And the guy was like, well, by genuine, we mean we always look out for the interests of the workers, no matter what, above all else. And we will never betray the working class. And by militant, it means we will die for our beliefs.
They are for real.
And the author even says, like, and he's not being hyperbole, I've been to people's funerals, and plenty of people have died. Even their chairperson died around 1986.
Yeah, Carl Orlando.
Yeah. Who? So anyway.
Anyway, so when I went there, because I actually seen a documentary about it, and what I had heard about the struggle was that the KMU chapter that was there at the time that represented the workers that were there, and also there was a peasant organization that called the KMP, which is the Kilosan Magbubukid ng Pilipinas, or the Alliance of Peasants. So basically, these two groups, like workers and peasants, like linked up to like fight against the ownership of the Cojanco family. And so they basically said, look, we're not going to farm any more sugarcane because we're getting paid like 15 cents a week and we're not getting any food to eat and our kids are like really sick. We can't take them to the hospital because we can't afford it. We're in like debt up to our necks. You better change something or else you're not getting any more freaking sugarcane, right? In response to them, you know, basically forming a picking line and stopping their labor, the Philippine government sent not only the police but also the military to break up the strike.
Helicopters,
tanks, everything, right? Armed guards. And on top of that, they also like brought in a bunch of like armed goons that were not military or police. They come in there with batons and
all kinds, machetes and whatever. Basically, brainwash them, tell them they're communists and they're out to convert their kids to atheism,
right, like etc. And so they went in there and like they were clashing and they were fighting, and you know, like, you know, these workers, like, they have sticks and slingshots pretty much to defend themselves against this. So after that went on, and the police and the military, like, you know, beat the hell out of these people, they couldn't get them to go away. They fired tear gas on them for about 3 days. They wouldn't give up. So the military eventually just fired upon people. They killed about 20, 30 people. Not just workers, but they killed women. Workers, they killed young children. Your children died from the tear gas attacks. Mm. I mean, it was a really, really terrible event. And
Hacienda Luisita Massacre.
Exactly. So they called the Hacienda Luisita Massacre. If you want to check out, there's a documentary that was made. One of them is called Aklasan, which is Tagalog for uprising. And then there's also a documentary that was created. And I always forget the name of it, though, because it's like something, it's a really deep Tagalog word. But I actually went there. And I saw the land where the massacre occurred, and it was a really heart-wrenching experience. So a lot of folks were killed, and yeah, as Jack was saying earlier, like this genuine like militant like labor organizing, they were literally willing to lay down their lives in a picket line.
Not only the workers, the leaders who were trying to organize them. Some of them were killed or later abducted.
Right. So yeah, I went there, and it was a trip because you can watch the documentary, you know, and people will watch the documentary, get a little teary-eyed, and get really upset, but nothing compares to actually being in the same spot where that happened and actually talking to people who experienced it. In fact, probably one of the most intense experiences I had at that time was we were actually watching the documentary, because they do this whenever anyone comes to visit them, because people hear about it, but they maybe not necessarily seen documentaries about it. They have you sit, and they bring out a TV, and they play the documentary, and then they kind of explain, you know, oh, this is what else happened, or these are other stories of so-and-so. And there was one point where there is someone who actually had been shot, and they were taking him to the hospital. He later died in the hospital. And one of the people that was watching the movie with us, he leaned over, and he said to one of the folks who could speak Kapampangan, because that's the language they speak. He said, that was my brother. Like, someone literally, like, leaned over and pointed to a person who had been shot on the screen and said that was his younger brother that had passed away during the Hacienda Luisita Massacre.
Wow.
Now, that is some intense shit.
Yeah.
And so, like I said, you can read all you want. You can study all you want. You can watch as many documentaries as you want. But actually being there will completely solidify your political understanding of what is going on in a place where you've never been to.
There we go.
That's... Jack, that's what you have to look forward to. And, okay. And obviously the experience is going to be incredibly intense. The weather's going to be hot.
Everything is just more intense.
Like, yeah. Like, you know what? The octagon, nothing. that is not, there's nothing that can possibly compare to like the experience of going to a place like the Philippines and seeing genuine labor organizing like for yourself.
There you go.
Yeah. Mm. And do you have any feelings on that? Or?
No, I look forward to the Philippines. I'm going to be updating my blog as much as I can. I don't know how, if I'm in certain areas without internet, but I'll try. I'll try the best I can. So I'll be updating it with what people are telling me, what my experiences are. I did this when I was in Ireland. Have really not too many questions to ask. God, I don't know how many people I know have been to the exposure trips, but I've heard all her stories, so I look forward to seeing the folks over there, such as Ta Ritz, who's international coordinator. I'm going to give her some chocolate so she doesn't bite my head off, because apparently this person is a... No chocolate?
Well,
apparently she's mean.
She's not mean. She's just very stern, and she doesn't fuck around. Let's just put it that way. So, I mean, she's really, really nice. But it's just, you know, do your goddamn work. You know, do what you're going to say you're going to do. Yeah, because she doesn't play with that.
Yeah.
You know.
So I'll meet up with some folks during the State of the Nation protest. People are going to be protesting all over the United States in front of Philippine consulates.
Yeah, July 27th,
something like that. Yeah, and I'll be there in Manila witnessing gigantic paper mache effigy. Like things that are like
they make this humongous effigy of the president,
15 feet tall. They're going to burn it.
And then they set it on fire.
Yeah, then they set it on fire. And if it's rainy and they can't set it on fire, then they just get pissed and rip it down and like stomp on it. Understandably, because obviously the regime is oppressing the people for their own interests and for U.S. interests. So I'll be seeing all that and reporting on my blog, and I'll be reporting back in the United States during report backs if people want to hear.
Well, I'm curious though. Like, there's a couple of things. So, is there anything you're looking forward to eating when you're there? Because people always talk about that. At least Filipinos, really. People talk about like what I want to eat when I get there. All these fruits and vegetables, and you know, dishes that I don't really.
Jackfruit.
Yeah.
Very smelly, but it's pretty tasty.
Or are you talking about durian?
No, I don't know.
Durian is the stinky one.
Yeah.
But jackfruit's pretty good.
Yeah. Whatever. Fruits.
experts.
Yeah. I'm going to have to...
They tell you about the tabo? Tell you about that at all?
What's the tabo?
Because we don't have... at least in the Philippines, like, toilet paper is not really, like, a common thing. Like, so, you know, you use, like, you run water down your ass crack after you've taken a dump, and then you use your fingers to, like...
Clean
the shit out of your ass.
I'll do that. It's all good.
Yeah.
I already do that anyway. So, it's okay.
I figure. Yeah. You're right-handed, right?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
So, when I eat my food, I'll be using my left hand to wipe my own ass.
And is there anything that you're looking forward to in terms of seeing, like, from the KMU?
From the KMU? Well, since I am a union and I'm a shop steward, I definitely want to see what their mentality is. Because the mentality in the United States with unions is just shit. It's absolute garbage. In fact, the AFL-CIO is an imperialist union or labor center that has tried to, like, set up yellow unions in the Philippines.
Opposition to the KMU.
Yeah, they were in opposition to the KMU, and the KMU lost lives because of that, and they successfully booted them out during the 80s. So I'm looking forward to from workshops from the KMU about whatever they want to teach me, political economy, labor organizing. To a certain extent, I can't, you know, necessarily we can't organize the way they organize over there. But it will be interesting to see how they organize. So that's what I'm looking forward to, and that's that's gonna be where I'm gonna be for the next 3 weeks. In case you see sparse blogging.
Oh, they're probably gonna ask Jack to I know. They're probably gonna ask Jack to help do some media attention stuff. Because I mean, and this is just the reality of things in the world. Whenever white folks come back to the Philippines. I mean, the Philippine movement will basically be like, look, like, we're not just some fringe organization that is crazy. Like,
we have this white person
here. There's some white dude here who, you know, and white people are cool, right? So, you know, when white people come, like, they'll put you up in front of in a media panel and be like, look, if we were so crazy and we were so weird and we were so militant and we were so inaccessible and fringy, then, you know, this American who's studying to be a priest
would
not spend their time coming back to our country and like hanging out with us.
What am I going to say though when they ask me like, what's the solidarity like for the workers in the United States to the Philippines? Should I be truthful and just be like, oh, we don't like the Philippines. We don't know. have no solidarity.
You can be honest and just say, like, look, I mean, like,
there's work to be done.
Like, that's why there's this, you know, the whole yellow union versus genuine militant.
Exactly.
Like, unionism is like, there's a contradiction.
There you go. I can do that political line. Booyah.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm here, to learn from the best, KMU.
To learn from the best.
Yeah, world-renowned labor union.
Yeah, and anyway. That book, by the way, is by Kim Skipes.
Kim Skipes.
Yeah.
Skipes.
I think it's Skipes.
Skipes.
It's a KMU... genuine militant labor union or something like that.
1980 to 1994.
Yeah, he was a sociologist in the Midwest somewhere. I can't remember what university is at. But I think it's a pretty decent book, and so Jack's reading that right now, right?
Yep.
And yeah, if you want a good introduction to like the history of the KMU, how it organized and how it was able to survive the Marcos dictatorship, then you should go ahead and we have administrations in the Philippines. They have fascist dictatorships. Yeah, check out that book. Also check out those documentaries about the Hacienda Luisita massacre. Those will be made available. And check out Bayan.ph.
Bayan.ph, yeah.
And BayanUSA.org.
And KilosanMayoUno.org.
Is it .org or .com? I don't know. KilosanMayoUno. KilosanMayoUno.
Look it up. Actually, I'm just going to provide links in the podcast. Screw it. Don't look it up. Just look at our podcast.
There you go.
All right. And that leaves us, I guess, to the end of the podcast, Josh.
Jack, have a good trip.
Thank you.
Come back alive.
And, I will...
You're no good to us as a martyr.
I know. I will do my best. That would be a weird martyr situation.
Yeah.
My famous last words would be some, like, snarky, smart-ass remark.
Be like, wait, but I'm a white guy.
You can't do this. Oh, God. Anyway, well, we're going to leave you with the international, the Tagalog version.
Yes. And check out the awesome guitar work in the very beginning. It's hot.
It is hot.
All right.
Drop it like it's hot.
So, Jack, hanggang sa muli. I'll see you until then.
Until then.
All right. This is the PA Podcast with radical musings on philosophy, politics, and popular culture from an atheist.
And a priest.
Katarung ay pultang sasabog sa huling paghuhukom. Tapos ng kahapoy lagutin, tayong api ay mapaliwas. Tayo ngayon'y inaalipin, subalit atin ang bukas. Ito'y huling paglalaban, magkaisa ng masaklaw ng internasyonal, ang sangkatauhan. Ito'y huling paglalaban, magkaisa ng masaklaw ng internasyonal, ang sangkatauhan. Wala tayong maaasahang paghala o manunubos, kaya't ang ating kaligtas ay nasa ating pagkilos. Manggagawa, bawiin ang yaman, kaisip ay palayain. Ang maso ay ating hawakan, kinabukas ay panggayin. Ito'y huling paglalaban, magkaisa ng masaklaw ng internasyonal, ang sangkatauhan. Ito'y huling paglalaban, magkaisa ng masaklaw ng internasyonal, ang sangkatauhan.
Yes, we... Ow!
Ow.
You hurt me.
You hurt me just like Brock Lesnar hurt... What was that guy's name? Frank?
Frank Mir.
Yeah. Did you know Brock Lesnar apologized after his I hate Bud Light and I'm going to like... have sex with my wife comment in the post-fight interview.
Dana White gave him a little bit of a tongue-lashing, and then he forced him to do the press conference while he was holding a Bud Light.
Oh, yeah, I did notice that. That was the only thing I was upset. I'm glad he apologized, but I am not glad he apologized for insulting the crappiest beer known to man, which is Bud Light.
I love it. I love it. I'm going to go home tonight. I'm going to drink a Coors Light. That's a Coors Light because Bud Light won't pay me nothing.